Got to keep current.
10987654321 10 20 30 40 10 987654321.
And we're back. Thank you so much for all the tweets, the messages, the encouragement, the "when are you guys coming back" messages and tweets. We appreciate all of them. Welcome to the second season of 31 Thoughts, the podcast brought to you by the all new 2018 GMC Sierra Denali. Elliot, beardless one, let's begin this year's podcast by sort of doing what we finished up with last season, 31 teams and where they are at. Let's go division by division. We'll start in the Pacific. Where's Anaheim at right now?
I think they're kind of trying to figure all that out. They've had a really interesting summer. Patrick Eaves is back skating. Ryan Kesler's back skating, but they don't know when these guys are going to play. I thought Kesler, Eric Stevens, had a really good story about how they're trying to be honest with each other about when he can play and when he can't. And Ryan, be honest with us. If he can't play, don't play. They've got, what I understand is, a really difficult behind-the-scenes contract negotiation with Nick Ritchie. I understand that the Ducks and the agency there, Newport, that has not been an easy negotiation. And also, they don't have Jacob Silverberg signed. He's a UFA.
Always stealth Selke Trophy candidate.
Yeah, and, you know, that's an interesting one. Like, and they're trying to change their culture. They're trying to become faster. They're trying to change the way they do things. I like the fact that they went after that. This is one of the teams I'm sitting there and I'm saying, Jeff, I don't know what to expect from these guys this year. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking forward to seeing what that is.
Someone new on D, whether it's Larson, whether it's Patterson, like, there's going to be some newness back there, but their D is still great, thank you very much, as is their starting net mining. To me, the big questions around Anaheim is who's going to score the goals, and to your previous point, is this team fast enough? And you circle one player when you ask those two questions. Where's Corey Perry at?
I think they're all wondering that same thing, too. I could see a real situation where, if it doesn't work, this is Corey Perry's last year with the Ducks.
Interesting. There was one player last year at the draft that I was fascinated by and even loved him as a top 10 guy. He didn't end up going top 10. Anaheim drafted him in the first, nonetheless, and that was Isaac Lundestrom from Sweden. Loved him, sort of a Patrice Bergeron light style player. And at camp this year, I texted someone from Anaheim and I said, how's Lundestrom doing? And I'll read you the response. He has been excellent. I would be dying to play on his line if I was a winger. Quiet confidence. Don't think he's going to play this season, but Lundestrom down the line, you're going to hear plenty of in Anaheim.
Was that Bob Murray?
No, that was not Bob Murray.
Was it Randy Carlyle?
You know what? Speaking of Randy Carlyle, is this the last year of his deal? I think it might be.
I have to check.
Where is Anaheim with Randy Carlyle? Okay, from the Anaheim Ducks in the Pacific, let's go to Arizona. Welcome in Alex Galchenyuk. Welcome in Vinny Hinostroza. And welcome Oliver Ekman-Larsson as captain.
Every year I do a thing. It's, if I had any guts, I'd pick this team to win the Stanley Cup final. Or if I had any guts, I'd pick this team to make the playoffs. And Arizona's in Group B this year.
Yeah.
I think they're good.
They could be Colorado / New Jersey,
yes,
maybe?
Yes, I think they're good. I think they're a lot better. I mean, it all depends on if Ranta and Kemper can hold the fort down. Goaltending is everything. I like the moves they've made. I think they're better. You know, that's a really interesting division. I think they're better. I think San Jose is really good. I think Vegas is still really good. I think Calgary is better.
When you say interesting, do you mean jump ball? Because we don't know really who's good or who's bad in that division
yet. Yeah, well,
yet.
That's the thing. Like, who's good? I think San Jose is really good.
I think they are.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you're
like, I don't know. Like, I waffle on all the teams in the Pacific.
Well,
like,
that's
seriously.
What I'm saying. Like, I think San Jose is really good. I think Calgary should be good. And I think Arizona is better than we give them credit for. And I know a lot of people are expecting Vegas to drop off. I think they're still really good.
They lost Neil. They picked up Pacioretty. We'll get to Vegas in a second.
And Stastny.
Yes.
But I don't know what to make of L.A. I don't know what to make of Anaheim. I don't know what to make of Edmonton. And we think Vancouver's not very good. So I see three or four teams this year in that division.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you said to me, you have to bet $1,000 on how these teams are going to do.
Oh, man.
I would have no idea.
Not a chance.
No idea. I think Arizona is a playoff team. But there's a lot there that I don't No.
How much stock do you put in what we saw from Arizona at the end of the season last year? They got the goaltending. They got it looked like a different Arizona team when the starter came back. Is that the real Arizona? Or do you say to yourself, you know what? They're so far out of it. Anything they do is fool's gold.
Craig Simpson was always a big guy in that. You be careful of teams who do well when they're done. And, you know, when I used to cover not the NBA, but Major League Baseball.
That meme is back.
Yeah, that's right. When I used to cover Major League Baseball, that was one thing even the organizations would say. You know, you'd come out and you'd say, look, we went 20-2 in September, and we've got to sell tickets because the rest of the year was so bad. But even we know behind the scenes, like, you got to be careful about that. I just look at their roster. They're pretty deep. I think Galchenyuk being out of Montreal, he should be a lot better. I'm a big Clayton Keller guy.
I know it's still early in his career, but does it feel to you, because it kind of does to me, like it's make or break for Dylan Strome?
I do agree with that. I think he's getting to a point where he's got to show he's an NHL player.
Not necessarily as a centerman, but even as a winger.
Just someone.
Doesn't he need to stick with the team this year, the big squad?
Just someone. I think they're better. But again, that division... I have no idea what that division is going to be like. Like the same team, I wouldn't be surprised if they got 70 points or they got 110 points.
Calgary, one of those teams. Let's go there. Out Dougie Hamilton, out Michael Ferland, out Adam Fox, in Noah Hanifin, and who else came in?
Lindholm.
Lindholm comes in.
Yeah, and
James
they
Neal
got
as well.
James Neal. But I think as important as that is, I thought their third and fourth lines last year really got caved, and at times they looked slow, especially as the season went on. I think Zarnik and Derek Ryan are two guys, like that first game they played in China, and I know it could have been foggy because it was the middle of the night, but I really thought they made them look faster.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in that division, you have to be fast to be successful.
Sam Bennett looked good this morning,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, but you know, he looks like a fourth line guy right now in terms of where they're going to play him. So I'm curious to see where he's going to be. I think Calgary should be a better team. I mean, Lindholm is going to be a big one, and also Hanifin. And I'm told that he felt he was angry that Carolina felt they weren't going to pay him. He's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder. That's never a bad thing.
Not that the two are green bananas, but you know what you're getting with Dougie Hamilton. And I still maintain he's one of the top 15 defensemen in the NHL, and they surrendered that for Noah Hanifin, which you're still not sure about.
Yeah.
Lindholm, which you're still not 100% sure about. Are you sure about those two? Do you know who those two are? Because we know who Dougie Hamilton is.
Yep.
They handed him away, and by that, they devalued maybe the best pair in the entire NHL, Dougie Hamilton and Mark Giordano. Is there enough coming back for certain to say this was a good trade for Calgary?
You can't say it for certain, but they're taking a gamble, right? And everything is a gamble. And here's the thing. I was at the coaches clinic in Toronto last summer. Yep. I really loved it. I learned a lot there. And Glenn Gullitson was one of the speakers, and he said that the two best one-timing defensemen in the NHL are Brent Burns and Dougie Hamilton. Mm-hmm. So that's a big weapon that Calgary is losing. So I just showed Jeff. I'm reading Gridiron Genius. That's the Michael Lombardi book about Bill Belichick. And I did a lot of reading this summer about what makes people successful or organizations successful. And, you know, the number one thing that a lot of people talked about was culture. And in this book, Lombardi and Belichick talk a lot about culture. And they say you don't get everything right. Like they say, we got a lot of things right. And he talks about Aaron Hernandez and how they obviously completely missed whatever was going on there. Again, I am not blaming Dougie Hamilton for this. I am not going with this whole museum thing because I don't think that was the issue here.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever happened in Calgary, there was something missing. They didn't have it. And I'm a big believer in it. I think for a team to be successful, you have to have it. You have to have a culture that pushes your whole to get better. I looked at Calgary, Jeff, and I said, that is a team that is less than the sum of its parts. And I'm not saying Dougie Hamilton was the reason, but I think that they looked at the Dougie and Freddie thing, and they said, if we want to change, this is the player we can trade that will allow us to make a sizable enough change because the return will be good enough for him.
Is it just a coincidence that perhaps Calgary lost, which you're talking about, it, when Matthew Tkachuk got hurt?
I do think that Matthew Tkachuk brings it, and I think James Neal brings it, too. And I admit, I have never really been certain what to make of James Neal for a lot of his career. You know, he's a guy that he's unbelievably confident. bit of a dirty player, but he's good. Like, man. James Neal is good. And I wrote in 31 Thoughts last week, I had a chance to talk to Belmar about him. Yep. And I said, you know, when you got to Vegas, you know, who I always ask this question, who was a guy that you didn't know, you thought, oh, man, this guy's a real jerk. And then you met him, and you're like, wow, like, totally different. And he laughed. He said, like, I'm not a hockey nerd like most guys, so I had to Google a lot of these guys. And he said, you know, James Neal, like, he carries himself like a superstar. And at the beginning, I didn't know what to make of him. But as we got better, his message was important. He was important. And I think that's what Calgary went out to get is, I think Calgary looked at their issues and said, we are missing something here. And it's whatever you have that makes us. They were less than the sum of their parts.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out, guys, who not only make them better on the ice, but we're trying to make them better than the sum of their parts.
All right. They are provincial rivals. They are the Edmonton Oilers, who were pretty inactive during the offseason. And that raised a lot of eyebrows considering they didn't qualify for the playoffs with Connor McDavid. Where's Edmonton at?
You know, I think a lot of it's going to be Cam Talbot. You know, is he the Cam Talbot of 2 years ago? Is he the Cam Talbot of this past year? I think they're hoping for much more of column A. I thought Darnell Nurse really came on. But there's a lot of guys you can say about Talbot. Like, Klefbom was 13 goals 2 years ago. He got hurt last year. Larson was a top defensive pair and a really good playoff run 2 years ago. He was not the same guy last year. And then we found out about his dad's illness.
Father passed away.
Draisaitl, and I know Draisaitl's points were good, but for the first half of the year, he was not the same guy because of the injury.
And even, he seemed to...
Wasn't himself.
I can understand wanting to play with Connor McDavid. Everybody wants to play with Connor McDavid. But anytime I talk to anybody in Edmonton, they'd say, Leon really wants to play with Connor McDavid, and that's where he is most comfortable.
And even McDavid last year, like, that flu sucked the life out of him early in the season.
Oh, that game against Dallas. Even though he was really good, I was looking like death on the bench.
Like, I like the Toby Reeder gamble. I think that is a good gamble to take. I even like the Chiasson gamble. I think that's a good gamble. I don't know, you know, where he is at this point in his career, but I think, you know, a guy who comes from Washington and kind of gave himself some new blood last year, I like that. I honestly don't know what to make of these guys, Jeff. I really don't.
Brodziak in. The special teams were an issue, specifically penalty killing. He comes in as one of the best penalty killers.
Yeah, I like the fact that McDavid saw how bad their power play was last year and says,
I got to shoot more.
I got to become a better shooter. I got to shoot more.
Yeah.
I think even they think they are still missing something.
Yeah, wingers is what they're
and
missing.
And maybe even D. And maybe
one,
even
one
D.
More D and
right
some wingers.
D. Yeah.
Is the market out there for them? Was the market out there for them in the offseason?
Well, they're tight to the cap. Obviously, Pierre Strelley said they wanted to be on Carlson for a year, but you know, he wasn't going there.
Max Pacioretty?
Like, he wasn't signing an extension there. I just look at them and I say, I don't know.
Here's a team that I say I don't know about. Although I'm sort of getting warmer to the, I don't think they're going to be very good. And maybe that's just the bias I have about players now that are getting deep into their 30s. The Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah.
And in comes Ilya Kovalchuk at 35, last Stanley Cup 2014. Everybody there is just 1 year older now.
Yeah. I'm with you. They're a team that wants to get faster, and, you know, Kovalchuk's not going to make them faster. I'll tell you, the biggest concern I had this week was reading Jeff Carter's quotes.
About his ankle?
About his ankle. He is hugely important to that team.
Sure.
And if he's worried about where his tendon is going to get to be, that's a concern for them. Like, you heard Anaheim say, we have to change the way we play. And I think the Kings are a team that has invested in changing the way they play hockey, too, over the last year. I think they have worked at that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I wonder if they're going to be where Anaheim is a year ago, realizing they're a step too slow. I mean, Toffoli has to be huge.
Sure.
Pearson has to be huge. I love Iafallo. I really like him as a find and a guy that can play for them.
You know, Kopitar's got to do the exact same thing 2 seasons in a row.
You know, but you know Kopitar's going to be great. You know Doughty's going to be great.
Of course.
I'm just worried about, are they going to be fast enough?
You know Kopitar's going to be great. You know Doughty's going to be great. You know Jake Muzzin's going to continue to be one of the more underrated defensemen in the NHL.
Martinez
and then after
is a good
that,
player, too.
He had a bad year last year,
though. Yeah, he
did,
but, you know, I can't imagine he didn't do everything to make sure that that wasn't going to happen again.
Vegas, the story of hockey last year, maybe the story of sports last year, 109 points, a Stanley Cup final appearance. They lose Neil, they lose Perron, they pick up Pacioretty, they pick up Stastny. Where's Vegas at? I'm going to get to Nate Schmidt in a second.
I think the thing about Vegas that's really interesting is that they had it last year. They had that special thing that we talked about earlier about Calgary. They had it.
Now, is it for them a high shooting percentage?
Well, I mean, it's all part of that, but they had a special group. They played for each other.
You don't have a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah.
The whole team had
and
it.
And also, you know, what happened opening night, the way they rallied around. Like, they had it.
Yep.
They had it. They've tinkered with that this year. Like, I can't imagine that what they gave Pacioretty was much different than they were willing to give James Neal.
Mm-hmm.
But James Neal wasn't willing to take something close to that deal. I do believe the difference between Vegas and Calgary was that fifth year.
Okay.
Vegas was not willing to go to 5 years. So James Neal decides to go. They're having a contract battle with Shea Theodore right now as we record this. They tinkered a little bit with it. And does that change what they had that was so special?
It's tough to come back with the identical team, though. Like, there's two different philosophies. One, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Come back with the exact same crew. And then the other philosophy of roster composition is change 15% every season.
Yeah.
Mandatory. You change 15% so it doesn't get stagnant. I don't know what the right answer is for Vegas. Because last year was such a freak. I just don't know.
Yeah, and they had a tough contract battle with Carlson, too.
Yep.
That one's been going on for a while. You never know how a player and a team are going to react to that. Does he understand it's just business? Does he take it personally? I mean, there's all of these questions. But I think they are good. Some people say they're not going to make the playoffs this year. I find that hard to believe. I think they're going to make the playoffs this year. But I do wonder if it is still going to be there. I'll tell you something else. I think if Mark Stone does hit the market, I think they're going to be a big player for him. You know, long history, him and Kelly McCrimmon.
Nate Schmidt, 20-game suspension, PEDs. By the way, before we get into the specifics of this one, and I'm not casting aspersions on anybody, but you know what would be refreshing? And I wonder how it would go over. Just once, and we'll just use Nate Schmidt as an example. Just once, Elliot, you know what I would love for someone to say?
I did it.
After getting caught?
Or,
but part of that, but the reason for it. Let's just say it's Nate Schmidt, gets caught, 20 games, PEDs popped, come out, take responsibility for it, say, yeah, I did it, because I will do whatever it takes to win a Stanley Cup. I want to bring a Stanley Cup to Vegas so bad, and we were so close. I will do anything to bring a Stanley Cup to this market. What would the reaction be if a player said that as their justification?
I think a lot of people would applaud
him or her, too.
But I would think that the long answer would be, in the short term, a lot of people would applaud it. I think a league would have no choice but to ask for tougher drug testing if a player said that.
Mm-hmm. Do you find it bizarre that in a sport where there are 750 of the best athletes in that sport competing for millions and millions of dollars, where the career difference between wearing your name on the back of your uniform and the front of your uniform is small, that they've only caught a couple of players using to enhance their performance? My first thought is the best thing for drug testing for the NHL would be to catch 20 guys. That would be the best instead of just Sean Hill.
I'm a big believer that the cheaters are always ahead of the testers.
I'm with you.
And, you know, to be honest, if you really are a user and you know what you're doing, and you probably have somebody that would, you know basically when you could be tested pretty much. Like, you know that there's a certain amount of time that they can test you in the summer.
Well, you see the SI book coming out this summer. I mean, make sure you give it to the guys in the fourth inning so it's gone by the seventh.
Yeah, you can do that. And I believe that's one of the NHL's arguments. Like, Nate Schmidt came out and said, I was caught with trace amounts and 7 parts per million, and that's nothing. And absolutely it's nothing. When I first said that, I was like, oh, really? Like, that's what we're going over here? And a buddy of mine to play devil's advocate says, and he's a lawyer, he said, if I worked for the NHL, I would say, well, that doesn't necessarily mean we're not coming to the end of it getting out of your system.
Yeah.
And that's probably what the NHL argued. Now, apparently, and nobody will confirm this, but Nate Schmidt argued that he ate contaminated meat. I think it was cow meat. I don't know. Again, nobody will confirm this. But Nate Schmidt argued that he ate contaminated meat. and that's how we got it. And I heard what the arbitrator said was, well, whatever's in your system is not natural, it's synthetic. And are there examples of where this has happened before? And I was told that whatever they provided as examples did not convince the arbitrator that that was enough to overturn the fact that this was in his system. Now, the other issue, and I do believe this is going to become a collective bargaining issue, Jeff, is that in certain situations, other testing, the amount that's in your system matters.
Mm-hmm.
And that there are some tests that other leagues that Schmidt would have participated in where that number would not have resulted in a positive
underneath
test.
The line.
So I do believe you'll see the Players Association come in and say, we want certain standards or thresholds that they don't have now. Now it's in or out.
This wasn't a situation where it's an elevated level of testosterone, which is produced naturally in the body. This is something that is foreign to the body, not naturally produced. And hey, you know, we caught you with these testosterone replacement therapy, and we caught you using estrogen blockers, and we're getting you on the blocker, assuming you're getting, you know, TRT injections. This is something foreign to your body that was in there.
That's what I was told. And again, nobody will confirm it, but that's what I was told, and I believe the source.
How does it hurt Vegas on the ice not having Nate Schmidt?
Well, he's a hell of a player.
Sure is.
I mean, you know, after 20 games of rest,
yeah,
he's going to come out like a fireball out of the chute when it comes.
And so they're getting a free player after 20 games.
They're getting a free player after 20 games. And his statement, I thought, was excellent.
It was utterly shocking to be informed that I tested positive for a microscopic amount of a tainted substance. Not only did I not intentionally take a banned substance, I could not have received any performance enhancement benefit from the trace amount that inadvertently got into my system. This low amount was consistent with environmental contamination that I could not possibly have prevented. While I support having a strong performance-enhancing substances program in place for our sport, it is difficult to accept this suspension.
Adding, quote, I will not accept being labeled a cheater.
You know, he did everything he can to argue it, and certainly I believe public sentiment is on Nate Schmidt's side, that he is saying that I didn't do this, I'm not a cheater, this is how it happened. You know, Sean Horkoff was another guy, he took all the responsibility, said this is totally my fault. But as I said to someone, you know, why didn't you take his explanation? And they said to me, for an arbitrator, it's law. It's black or it's white.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't get far enough into the white.
If you were an athlete,
yep,
if you played in the NHL, would you use?
I would like to sit here and tell you right now that the answer is no. And I believe that if I was good enough to get there, I think the answer would be no. But I look at the concussion debate, Jeff,
yep,
and people say, oh, if I had a concussion, I wouldn't play. And I am not like that. Like, I looked at James Neal on the bench last year when he refused to go off the bench.
Yeah.
And I have always said that if that was me and I really thought I could play and I was in game 5 of the Stanley Cup final, we were about to lose, I'm not going anywhere.
I'm saying
nobody is getting me off that bench. You will have to take me off that bench in a straitjacket at gunpoint. Like, if it was something that really mattered to me, then you're not getting me out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to tell you that I will always do the right thing. Like, I had a friend who was really close with a guy who was a fringe Major League Baseball player.
Yep.
And he couldn't make it. This was the heyday of the steroid era.
Yep.
And he started using, and he got in for a couple of years. And he said, it was the hardest decision I ever had to make that didn't involve my family, because I was going from a clean player to a cheater. And he said, it got me 2 years of Major League Baseball. He said, to me, it was worth it. He said, the hardest thing was looking people in the eye who he knew wasn't using. And I agree with that. Like, Jeff, if you and I were both fringe NHLers and I got in because I used and I knew you didn't, I would have trouble looking you in the eye.
Really?
But it doesn't mean that I wouldn't do it.
See, when the Nate Schmidt thing happened, the Sean Hill before that, Sean Horkoff, all of it, anytime an athlete gets popped, I always say to myself, what would I have done if that were me? And I'll tell you, Elliot, if I were that close to making the NHL or even playing in the NHL and wanted to keep my spot, I'd be a pharmacy. I know that for a fact about myself. I would probably do it. And that's why I don't cast aspersions on any of these guys that get caught.
I don't like to tell other people what to do. But I get it, Jeff. I totally get it.
Like, especially, I look at him and I understand. I'm like, listen, I understand what you try. That's what I'm saying off the top. Look, I want to do anything it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if that really is like, that's it. I'm working for contract after contract. I'm working for the Stanley Cup. I understand all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that that drive can get you to do other things to achieve that goal, which is why I never cast any aspersions and don't look at players. Oh, that's a black mark on their career. I don't look at them that way at all.
You know, especially, Jeff, if you have, like, a tough family situation. Like, you have a...
100%.
First of all, if you're an athlete, there's a limited amount of time you're going to be able to make that money anyway. And secondly, like, if you have a child or a loved one who needs extra care because of any medical situation or condition they have, I get it. But I would tell you, like, again, the toughest thing for me would be to look in the eyes of someone who I know wasn't using and mm-hmm. maybe was losing their job to me. That would be the hardest thing for me.
Fair point.
I would hate that.
All right, we continue. San Jose Sharks.
Everybody, thanks for taking the time for being here. I'll keep my comments brief because I think we'll do a Q&A in a little bit. So this is really the official welcoming of Eric and Melinda Carlson to our organization. And we're excited to add them to our organization, but also to our community. Great player, obviously, that speaks for itself, but the work that both Mel and Eric do in the community in their former city is very much appreciated by us also. It's rare that this type of player comes available, and we've talked about difference makers, and we're very fortunate to have a hockey team that's got several difference makers on it. So I'm sitting here waiting for the Q&A after that we'll get to, but most importantly, I officially get to do this. It's been a long week, and I know it's been probably emotional and tough with what Eric has gone through to get to this point, but it is my pleasure now to introduce and present a jersey, because I know he's going to look great in teal, to our newest member, Eric Carlson.
I got to tell you, like, there were some GMs in the West that were really mad. They were angry. Doug Wilson, he's a closer. He's a salesman. He's a great salesman.
He gets them and he keeps them.
He gets
like he
them,
gets them well, and then they stay.
He knows he's got San Jose, right? He knows he's got San Jose. I can always remember Craig Rivet telling me the story about going from San Jose to Montreal, or Montreal to San Jose, and he goes, okay, when does the media come in? And Joe Thornton or someone goes, they're in. That's him.
Yeah, Steve's over there.
Yeah, so you go out there and you love it. I mean, it's a great place to live. It's expensive, but it's a great place to live. It's great for your family, outdoors, weather's beautiful. And the thing, too, is that team. Like, I'm not surprised that Vander Kane would go out there and sign, not only because they're offering $49 million, but because, I mean, look at those guys. That is a team that accepts people who are unafraid to be different.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you show up and you do the job, they will accept the fact that you're not a quote-unquote typical hockey player. But Wilson's a salesman. He knows what he's got around him, and he finds a way to do it. You know, they call him the dentist when he gets you in the chair and starts talking trade with you. I've had other GMs who tell me that the worst feeling in the NHL is when you've got only one team to trade with, and that guy is Doug Wilson.
Mm.
Because you're not getting out of there alive. Like, you know you're probably going to lose the deal. Because he can talk up his players and make it sound like, boy, you're getting a hell of a prospect here,
mm-hmm.
and everyone else is going to say, what? Like, what are you doing? And that's what happened here. They're going to be outstanding. They're going to be really good. I understood when they pitched to Tavares, they told him, you're the piece. Where we are right now, we have to win.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, how much longer are they getting Thornton and Pavelski healthy and at their best? So he told Tavares, you're the piece, from what I understand. And I'm sure they said the same thing to Carlson when he met with them. I think they know they're all in, and they're going to go out and they're going to get somebody else at some point too, maybe a center. They're all in it for this year. It's their 25th anniversary. They're hosting the All-Star game. You watch. They're all in this year. I think the first team to be all in this year.
When you first heard who was going the other way for Eric Carlson, what were your initial thoughts? Balcers and Norris and the picks and Chris Cherney, like, what went through your mind?
I was like,
did you measure it against Dallas right away, or did you say, we'll do Dallas later?
You tell me when you want to talk about Dallas. I know
sure.
You have some things you want to say about them, but honestly, Jeff, at the end, I was told there was nobody else.
As far as what San Jose had to give up to get Erik Karlsson.
Well, the first thing you do is you start asking people, okay, what do we got here in Norris and Balcers?
See, the first thing I thought of is, hang on, I'm looking for Timo Meier's name here and I don't see it. I'm looking for Hertl's name and I don't see it.
You know, about 20 minutes before the trade broke, somebody told me they heard Meier was in it.
Oh.
And so I called around and a couple of people told me, don't go with that because he's not in it. And that was my reaction too. I was like, whoa, like there's no Meier. Well, it's got to be Hertl.
Yeah.
Like other GMs, when they hear that it's San Jose, they're like, well, it's got Meyer's got to be in it. And I'm like, it doesn't look like it. They go, well, it's got to be Hertl. And I go, I'm being told it's not him either. And they're like, what? My first reaction, honestly, was, who are these guys in Norris and Balcers and how good are they?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you saw Dorion's interview with David the other night at Hockeyville, and I thought Pierre Dorion actually explained it pretty well from the seat he was in.
We all know when you get to a certain point, and it's probably best for all parties to move on. And for the benefit of this organization, for the benefit of the rebuild, for the succession of the rebuild, I think today we made the proper decision. I think Erik wanted to go to a place where he was going to have a chance to win, and we acquired the quantity and quality pieces that will allow us to have a successful rebuild.
He had a player who wasn't going to sign an extension, and he was trading a rental. And I'm not surprised you're not getting Timo Meier or Hertl for a rental. Now, if they sign him...
But why not just wait until there's an injury?
I really believe...
I know you don't want him in camp,
that's
but...
That's it. I think the owner made the call. It's just like what happened with Danny Heatley several years ago.
Yeah.
He showed up at camp and they're like, this is the end of this. I had heard that Ottawa might have been worried about Karlsson's ankle, but I was told that wasn't an issue.
All right, we will get to Ottawa. Stay tuned, folks. Don't worry. May take us a while. Vancouver, let's finish up there in the Pacific. Vancouver Canucks, man, does Pettersson look good. I know it's preseason games, but...
Well, he scored that goal against Winnipeg, and he had the owner tweeting.
He looks fantastic.
And then he had that great move on Ryan Strome the other night.
Oh, who's still spinning.
It's interesting because they're trying him at center, right? And, you know, a center's a big responsibility. But boy, this first couple weeks is going great for Vancouver. And their fans are foaming at the mouth and their jaws
Pettersson
are dropping.
And Besser.
Couldn't drop the first 2 weeks better for the Vancouver Canucks. Dahlin looks good, but this is going to be a long season. And, you know, he's going to have his challenges, but hey, he can't start any better than he started for Vancouver.
True. Okay, to the Central, Chicago Blackhawks. One of the big questions, I guess, going in is what did they do to try to get back to the playoffs? And maybe the sidebar to that is, can they get back to the playoffs with this lineup? And C, can they get back to this lineup without Corey Crawford?
I think that's going to be really difficult. I think it's a victory for them that he is even on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll be honest, I don't know what to make of it. You know, the one thing you have to do, and I've learned this over the years, is if he can't play and you want insurance to pick up the money and take it off your cap, insurance to pay the salary, you have to go through the process. You have to take your physical. You have to try to play. And in a worst case scenario, that's what's going on here, mm-hmm. that Corey Crawford has to prove that he can't play. I'm sure he wants to give it another chance to make sure it could work. I just think that the attitude I've got kind of from Chicago is we really hope he can play. We just don't know if we can really count on it. You know, that puts you behind the eight ball right away. Patrick Kane looks great. Taves looks great. Those guys have worked at it all in the summer.
Kane and Schmaltz look really good to you.
Yeah, they do. To me, the biggest question is, you know, Duncan Keith. I never like to count out Duncan Keith.
Looking back with Seabrook, by the way.
Yeah, but can he get back there? Like, I think Duncan Keith, in a lot of ways, is their most important player. He doesn't have to win the Norris Trophy,
mm-hmm.
but if he's not at the top level, can you get there after Crawford?
Defense is a huge issue. Looks like they're putting Keith back with Seabrook, where there once was enormous success. You talked about Corey Crawford. What about up front? What about up front and where the production is going to come from? We know what Patrick Kane's going to do. Have a pretty good idea of where Nick Schmaltz is going to be.
Yep.
To me, one of the big ones is which version of Jonathan Taves is coming up this year.
Yeah, Saad too. I think, you know, Saad has to give them a lot. You know, this is an organization that, you know, has to restock a little bit. they've traded some of their talented young guys out now. I'm really curious to see it. Here's my other question about Chicago is ownership getting impatient at all?
I was going to get to Q and Bowman here in a sec. But.
Well, the thing is, like, everybody knows their relationship isn't easy. You know, there have been questions, one or the other, both, what. I get the sense just from outside that this is an organization that is really wrestling with what is our loyalty here. And they should have a lot of loyalty to those guys. They ended a 50-year Stanley Cup drought, and, you know, they've won three of them. But I do get the sense, Jeff, that they are starting to wrestle with that, or are wrestling with that. How long are we going to be loyal to this?
So what would be the first decision then? Would it be coach / general manager? Would it be player? Would it be
franchise? Well, they've already done players.
But I'm talking the big boys.
Well, what are you going to trade Kane or Taves?
Yeah. I know they're whoppers, but I mean, if ownership is looking down and saying, hey, we're not missing the playoffs again, and we need something big.
The guy I wonder about is, and this is why I wonder about him, the guy whose salary you might be able to say to another team, you can handle this, is Keith's.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I don't know if he'd want to leave. I don't know if they would even ask him, but I wonder if I was a decent team that needed a guy who could play D for me, and I don't even necessarily need him to be my best D, but what if he was like a second pair guy, a number 2, 3, 4 D,
mm-hmm.
And it really pains me to call Duncan Keith a 3, 4 D. He's the guy who I'd be scouting this year.
Victor Edsel is someone, I remember talking to some players last year at the American Hockey League affiliate, and that was the player they kept coming back to. Watch this guy. He's going to be the next star for the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. Fantastic last year.
And he came
in the
over
playoffs.
In the deal with Nashville.
Just a fantastic player. And we'll see if a player like Henry Yokiharju ends up making the blue line. Colorado. They have two picks in the first round, one of them courtesy of the Ottawa Senators. They have the top line, which is amongst the best in the NHL, Elliot. And after that, blank.
I don't think you ever sit there and say we want to take a step back, but I think they're one team that is prepared for the possibility of it because I think they really want to find out what they've got. I think they're looking at Kerfoot and they're looking at Jost and they're saying, what do we really have in these two guys? I heard they were kind of kicking around Mark Stone a little bit, like mm-hmm. them in Vegas. And I don't know if that's true, but the one thing I did hear was that they kind of look at it like, we really have to find out, in addition to Nathan MacKinnon and the guys we've got, we got to find out. We know we've got MacKinnon. We know we've got Rantanen. We know we've got a bunch of guys here. But we got to find out what we got in these two guys. And I think that's what they're going to do. And, you know, the other thing, too, is they could have a top player drop onto their lap next year from the Ottawa Senators.
Could be Jack Hughes.
I think they're sitting there saying, we're a year away, unless they suddenly go gangbusters and decide they really want to do something. I think they're going to stand pat and say, we really got to see what we have in one of these two guys. And I'll tell you this, too. I've heard like Tyson Barrie stuff, because his name's been in and out. I hear it's totally quiet, and Colorado's told everyone, you know, if you're coming at us with a hockey deal, because he's got 2 years left in his deal, maybe. But other than that, we feel no pressure to do anything.
Like the Philip Grubauer deal?
I thought
it was a real nice piece of business.
I agree with you. I think it was a real nice piece of business, too.
Let's get to Dallas. The big one, and what a way to announce it on Twitter, the Tyler Seguin deal.
What a great announcement,
awesome.
Eh?
It was fantastic.
The video game? I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
If someone said if they were really current, they could have done it with like a Fortnite screen grab. And I said, give the old bit guys from the 80s
thank you.
Something here. Okay?
Yeah, give us Galaxian something. We're cool
Pitfall
with that.
Or whatever it was.
Now, on that same day, there was all sorts of reports that Dallas was going to do two pieces of business.
And I did
hot
hear
heavy
that.
Heavy for Carlson and do the Seguin deal. And I think there was a feeling in Dallas early that day that both those things were going to happen.
So tell me what you heard.
So from what I've been able to sort of piece together is it looks like, and measure this against the San Jose package, it looked like Roope Hintz,
mm-hmm.
it looked like Devin Shore, it looked like Julius Honka, and guaranteed picks. So no contingencies on them.
Now, I heard that Dallas made an offer. I can't say I heard what you heard. And I don't want anyone to think that this is me casting aspersions on what Jeff is saying.
How dare you?
Because Jeff's got good sources. I heard that Dallas was in it. I heard Dallas had improved their offer. Mm-hmm. I heard Ottawa, which was not at the Traverse City tournament, watched Dallas's games there pretty tight. And I know that Hintz had an unbelievable tournament there. He was really good. And somebody told me that Ottawa had noticed. So that's a lot of circumstantial evidence that I think that you are definitely on to something. I was just told at the end of the day, San Jose was the last team left standing. And the only thing I would say, Jeff, is if that was on the table, Honka, Hintz, Shore, and guaranteed picks.
Why didn't Ottawa go that route?
Why didn't Ottawa go that way?
Don't know. To me, it seems like a better deal. But again, you're, but,
for
but,
sure, it but does. Like on, in but names, it makes total sense.
But at the
sense.
Same time, you're still dealing with green bananas. We suspect we know how good Rupe
but
Hintz is going to be.
But at least you know that Honka may be still a bit of a green banana in terms of where he is, but at least you have better knowledge.
You have more information,
sure,
but jury is still
out. Yes. But Honka's the kind of guy, you're Ottawa, that's the kind of you should be gambling on. Unless you're absolutely convinced that he can't play.
Unless you look at it and you say, well, you know what, do we want Honka or do we want Dylan DeMello? We'll take DeMello. Do we want Devin Shore or do we want Chris Cherney? We'll take Chris Cherney.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it looks like if that was the Dallas deal, it does look better. If that is indeed what the Dallas deal was, every team values players differently.
Yeah.
I don't know. Where are you at with Dallas this year? New coach, Jim Montgomery. Should add about, what, half a puck per game?
Well, they're going
to
play
offense.
Bottom line. There's no question about that. I think they should be good. I'm pro-Dallas. That's another team right now, Jeff, that we talked about Calgary not being the sum of their parts.
Dallas?
That's Dallas, too.
Oh, by the way, Ty Dellandrea just signed today. It's
yes,
entry-level deal.
I saw that already.
I would imagine that would be one of the players, if you're dealing with Ottawa, that they would have asked for.
I believe there were two guys they were told they couldn't have. One was Dellandrea and the other was Heiskanen.
Miro Heiskanen?
Yeah. Now, they've got some guys, I think they really want to push the big guys like Dickinson. I just get the sense that they are not 100% happy with Jamie Benn.
In what sense?
I just think they feel that he's got more to give.
Like back to Hart Trophy Jamie Benn?
I feel that he should be there. Now, the hip thing, I think, is an issue. And Benn has taken pains to shape his body better for it. But I just get the sense that they're not 100% happy with him.
What about Spezza? And Hitch was a bad fit from day one.
Yes. If anybody can get the most out of Jason Spezza, you think it would be a guy like Jim Montgomery?
Let him play.
I got a lot of time for Jason Spezza. Just as a person, I have an awful lot of time for him. And I hope it goes well for him.
One of the players at the beginning of the year, who's going to be that breakthrough player? Who's going to be that surprise player who's sort of flown under the radar a little bit? Who you're just waiting to pop? I wonder if Radek Faksa can be that guy. Loved him last year as a sneaky selfie
great
candidate,
yeah,
like real good player.
I guess it just depends. Like, there's a lot of guys on that team who need offensive opportunity, right?
Yeah.
He just might not be in that spot yet.
Minnesota, where we have a lot of players with a lot of term on their contracts.
I think, you know, if Bruce Boudreau's never missed the playoffs, he might do the coaching job of his career to get there this year. That was a lopsided first-round series last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they won a game. The guy who made me a big fan was Matt Dumba. Like, I thought he was not healthy. And I thought he played really hard. I like that they're trying some interesting stuff with Greenway. But I know internally they were really disappointed with Niederreiter, with Coyle, and with Brodin. You know, they tried to make trades this year to package Ennis with some of those guys. It didn't work. I think that the concern in Minnesota is that they looked at some guys they thought were going to be the big-time core of their team for years to come, and now they're not sure that those guys are going to be guys. And that's a tough spot to be in, very tough spot.
Like I mentioned, the LA Kings might be the most average team in the NHL. I'm not sure if I said that about an hour ago when we started this podcast. I put Minnesota right there, too. Like, when I think of teams that are just I'm always curious about who the most average team is in any league. And the two that jump out at me in the NHL has been like the most average team right now, LA and Minnesota. Like, they're okay. They're good. You like Dumba? I like Spurgeon.
Spurgeon's
like Jason Zucker. Like, they're players that I like on them. They'll be okay. I like Devan Dubnyk. But I have a hard time getting them up into that next level or taking them down that significant tier. And they play in the division of death.
Yeah.
That's hard. And St. Louis just got a ton better.
Yeah.
That's hard. Nashville. Ellis Steele, by the way. What'd you think of that one? Did we do that last podcast? I can't remember.
I was a bit surprised. Not that he signed, because I think he wanted to sign. I really thought the no trade was going to be an issue there, and they got it done.
Mm-hmm.
Look, they're phenomenal. They are a really, really good team. They're a Stanley Cup contender. The biggest storyline this year is, does Saros become the number one goalie?
And buck the trend of you have to be over 6'2" to be a starting goaltender in the NHL.
Or does Rene keep the job, or do they go out and get someone else?
And can L.A. Tolvanen help score more goals there? And,
I mean, I'm not worried about them scoring goals. Like they can score. Legit Stanley Cup contender. One of the best they have. I think they're all looking at their goaltending and saying, how is this going to sort itself out?
They're the best team in the Central? Them or Winnipeg?
It's the two of them.
What about the St. Louis Blues? Let's get there. And they were frisky in the offseason.
Yeah.
Ryan O'Reilly comes in. They have some really outstanding young prospects as well. We talked a lot about them last season, certainly towards the end. Where are you at with St. Louis right now? And it doesn't look good for the goaltending situation. Let's start there.
You know, all the talk is about going out and getting O'Reilly and all the things they did like that. To me, when I watch them, I'm curious about all their kids. You know, we had Thomas last year on the podcast.
Robert Thomas, yeah.
Kyrou, Fabry coming
healthy
back.
Healthy Robbie Fabry.
Like, I'm rooting for that guy.
Sure.
You know, I'm rooting for him. I want him to do well. That guy's had to fight to get back. So when I see the excitement around the Blues, I don't necessarily think about it in terms of what they traded for. It's what they've got coming, because I think those guys are really talented guys. Like, I got the sense, talking to people who dealt with the Blues, that they felt they just got stale.
Mm.
And they had to try something different. And they sure are. But to me, when I look at it, as much as O'Reilly's going to excite them for the player he is, I think that the true excitement is going to come from the guys who are coming.
Surprised they've been able to hang on to them. I mean, when everyone comes looking for a trade from the St. Louis Blues, what do you always hear? We want Robert Thomas, we want Jordan Kyrou.
Well, I think that's just good management. Like, what are you going to give us that's going to make you get one of those guys?
Yeah. Is there a magic number for rookies for you for St. Louis?
No.
Like, can you play both Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas in this lineup?
Okay, I'll flip it on you. Why can't you?
I mean, if you make the team, you make the team. But if you have Stanley Cup aspirations, both?
Yeah, but we're coming back from a year with Vegas where we had 20 guys on a team like that.
None of them were. But these aren't first-year players, though.
No, I understand that. But, like, again, I'm going to refer to this Belichick book I'm reading. And one of the things he talks about is, Lombardi talks about, is you can't fool your dressing room, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, guys know who deserves to be on the team and guys know who don't. Like in Seattle in the NFL, one of the things they talked about, the reason that Richard Sherman had to be traded and that defense broke up, is because they felt that they were protecting Russell Wilson, like they weren't being honest with him about the mistakes he was making. You can't fool your dressing room. If Thomas and Kyrou and all those guys deserve to be on the team, then you have to put them on the team. And if after 8-10 games it doesn't work, then you make your change. But I really believe you don't win as an organization unless you say to your players, the best players are going to be here.
Are they a playoff team?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I look at that division, I think Winnipeg and Nashville, they're in.
Let's get there. Winnipeg Jets. They lose Paul Stastny. Josh Morrissey comes in with a new deal. Blake Wheeler comes in on the new deal. And still more eyes to the kids. Kyle Connor, really good season last year, quietly. And Jack Roslovic looks to have a position with the squad
somebody
now.
Somebody
there
told
gone.
Me Andrew Kopp
yeah.
came in looking really good, too.
Okay.
Look, I know everybody else in Canada who doesn't live in Toronto is sick of the Toronto Maple Leafs already. They've played one exhibition, or two, as we...
Yeah.
One, as we do this, two, as it's posted. And I know all of you are sick of the Maple Leafs. Canada's best team is the Jets. Again, they're legit. Like, how many teams do you look at right now and say they could win the Stanley Cup?
One, two, three, four... Five.
Okay, so you got
five teams.
And the Jets are one. Like,
yes.
They're on everybody. Like, that's a Stanley Cup team.
Yes.
The Jets in Nashville, they are Stanley Cup teams.
Yep.
I think they're going to be phenomenal. I think they are so good, and they seem to be a team that's like, no matter what distractions are there, they play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Trouba's had that contract situation hanging over him. It hasn't stopped, and it's a lot of it's his own choice.
Sure.
Hasn't stopped him from playing. You know, Lining is going to be going for $10 million. It's not stopping him from playing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Wheeler, you knew he wanted a new contract. Didn't stop him from playing. Bufflin didn't stop him from playing. I think those guys have a good approach to things.
Really quick, now that Dougie Hamilton and Mark Giordano was no longer a pair, the best pair in the NHL, Jones and Werenski in Columbus or Trouba Morrissey in Winnipeg?
This is not going to make me very popular in Canada, but I'll take Jones and Werenski.
All right, so that's the Western Conference. We'll take a pause. This is the 31 Thoughts podcast brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Sierra Denali. The East is next.
Zetterberg in the corner. Quick puck movement down low, and he comes back out, and Chelios' blast rebounds right over, and the Red Wings score. Zetterberg on the power play. It's 4-2.
22-year-old Henrik Zetterberg. He's a pretty handy guy around the front of the net, and he's going to be a good player in this league for many, many years to come.
Brendan Shanahan will give him the puck. Zetterberg on the back end at the goal post. Scores! Off the post and in! It's 5-2. Great shot, Henrik Zetterberg.
Zetterberg moves in. Backhand. Score! 15 seconds to go. Datsyuk Kripke and Kentel bring us home for the Stanley Cup with 10 seconds left.
Gonchar flips it over the line. Lidstrom fires it out to center ice. 5 seconds to go. Gonchar to Malkin over the Detroit line. Pushes it forward. Backhand. Oh, to the save! And the rebound puts right through the goal mouth. Time will run out. And the Detroit Red Wings are the 2008 Stanley Cup champions.
The winner of the Conn Smythe Trophy is Henrik Zetterberg.
Henrik Zetterberg is 36 years old. For the second consecutive season, he's going to play in 82 games. This will be his 82nd of this season, and 1,000 is a milestone. Here's Eric Friney.
When the puck is dropped here tonight, Henrik will be skating in his 1,000th career National Hockey League game, all while wearing the winged wheel. Henrik will become just the 7th player in franchise history to play 1,000 games in a Red Wings sweater, joining Gordie Howe, Steve Yzerman, Alex Delvecchio, Nicholas Lidstrom, Chris Draper, and Thomas Holmstrom.
Well, the other big news of the day, the captain is calling it a career after 1,082 NHL games, all wearing the winged wheel. Henrik Zetterberg made the announcement today. He is retiring.
Welcome back to the podcast, Jeff Merrick, Elliot Friedman. Before we get to the Eastern Conference, someone that we're all going to miss around hockey, both on the ice and off it, whether he's holding a stick or whether he has a microphone in his face, is Henrik Zetterberg, who joins the 31 Thoughts podcast now. Henrik, thank you so much for doing this. And I think we'd all heard the whispers over the summer, but until Ken Holland came out and said he's not going to play in the NHL anymore, his NHL career is over, I think we were all sort of surprised and saddened. What was it like hearing that discussed publicly, that you wouldn't be coming back to the NHL?
Well, it was kind of surreal when it all came public. I should probably figure out, you know, I lived in it for a little bit. You know, it all started in January last year when it kind of went south, and, you know, we took the decision just to play games and let me rest, no practice, and hopefully the summer would make it better, but it kind of didn't. But when it all came out there Friday, obviously it kind of hit me and it started to sink in.
I'm curious, you know, when you were going through this in the summer and you had to make your final decision, who did you ask for advice? Who did you talk to? Who went through the process with you to make the final decision?
Well, the last couple of years, obviously, it's been up and down. And you have people that helps you with your body, that probably knows more about your body than you do. And so, obviously, you have discussions with them. You talk to your family, because they probably been the ones that been seeing me up close the most and know what I've gone through. So, but also, eventually, when I went to see Dr. Kamisa in New York, and we kind of got it black on white again that nothing really is going the right way, that's when I understood finally that this was probably the only way to go.
You mentioned this all sort of to unravel for you back in January. Were there any games, Henrik, that at the end you got back to the dressing room and you sat down, you said to yourself, I'm not sure I should have played in that game?
I think once you're in the game or right after the game, you have stuff in you that kind of makes you a little bit better, feeling better. So it's more so in the mornings when you wake up or, you know, going into game days, that's when you doubt yourself that you're, if you're going to play or not.
Henrik, Daniel and Henrik Sedin last year, they started telling guys during the season, that their friends, that it was going to be their last year. So some guys knew and they kept it a secret. Did you tell anyone or did anyone on the ice say anything to you like, Henrik, is this going to be it?
You know, I think that the one player that was closest to me in the team and that I played with a lot was Nick Cronwell. We had a lot of discussions last year. He's gone through some struggles himself with his body. So I don't think it was that big a surprise for him. He knew it before Friday, too. So even though last year when I went through that, I had a feeling this could be it. So there was a few players that I went up to end of the year and kind of just, you know, thanked them. They said it was on and play with them, and they probably looked at me and wondered what I was doing.
Who'd you tell? I'm curious. Like, who were the guys you went to?
No, I think it was obviously there's a few guys that he wanted to stick off, and there was a few players that wanted to stick in return. And you know, some of those notes I write, I think those guys probably knew that it could be it.
Henrik, I'm not giving up here. I want to know whose stick did you want and who wanted your stick. I'm not quitting.
there's a few guys, obviously, that play a lot against throughout the years. And Sid is one of them. Obviously, we had a battle throughout the years. And it was a player that I respect a lot. And Thornton is another one that obviously is outlasting me. But, we played some good fights against each other.
I always thought that the greatest compliment that was ever given to you was, so you guys win the Stanley Cup in 2008. You beat Pittsburgh.
Hank, what was Sidney just saying to you as he was leaving the ice?
I don't know. I couldn't hear him. I think he's a little frustrated. So, you know, it's a lot of emotion in the game. So, no, that's it.
You think their frustration can be from the long 5-on-3 that you were such a key component on shutting down?
Yeah, it was huge for us. You know, they had a real opportunity there to tie it up, but we battled through it.
And that summer, Sidney Crosby, in his gym at home, puts up a picture of Henrik Zetterberg holding the Stanley Cup and uses that as motivation all summer. Like, to me, that is the most awesome compliment.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's true, though. But if it is, obviously, it is pretty cool. It's something that, you know, I probably will tell my son when he's older and my grandkids in the future.
Did you keep anything from that final game, keepsake, a puck, something from the game, take something from the Red Wings dressing room, anything?
Not really. I have a stick from that game. Actually, my dad has it. But there is a few stuff that you save throughout the years. But most of it, it's safe and sound with my dad. So he keeps everything.
Henrik, I want to go back to your first couple of years in the NHL playing with the Detroit Red Wings. You walk into a Red Wings dressing room and you sit down and you look around and it's your jaw must drop. It's Shanahan. It's Hull. It's Larionov. I mean, Lidstrom. I mean, you go up and down that lineup and you're looking and you're saying, okay, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer, Hall of Famer. Who were the guys that, you know, you looked up to? Who were the guys that helped you? Who are the ones that you pointed to and said, you know what? I became a better player because of this guy?
Well, first of all, coming in the league and coming into that kind of a team helped me. I don't think I can put it in words because there were so many guys and that were world-class players and they all were so kind to me. Something maybe had to do with Nick Lidstrom and Thomas Holmström that was there, and they were fellow Swedes. But there's so many guys there that that helped me out. You know, Igor Larionna was sat next to him my first year. Obviously, Stevie, Nick, Chris Draper, Brett Hull, you know. Playing with him and Pavel my first couple of years for sure made it easier for me, but I learned a lot of things from those two.
Sergei Fedorov comes to mind for me right away. I remember talking with someone about the Detroit Red Wings back in the heyday when you guys were top of the league every year, and we're talking about you and Pavel Datsyuk, and this person made the point. He said, hey, listen, when your top offensive players are also your top defensive players, you don't lose a line matchup. It's impossible. And I think to myself, you know what? That's kind of Sergei Fedorov as well. Like, how much did you look at a player like Fedorov and say, I want to be like that guy?
Well, coming in the league and being European and, you know, having Sergei as your teammate is pretty awesome. And things you just pick up by sitting on the bench watching him or playing with them. I think I played my first NHL game with him and Shanahan. So, but when you're in that moment, you don't think about it. But looking back to it, that's when you realized how blessed I was with the team as I had.
You know, Henrik, now when you look back and Jeff talked to you about, you know, the beginning and we asked you a little bit about last year, I always wonder, you've seen everything. What was the thing that you look back at your career that maybe surprised you the most or the thing that gave you the most lasting impression that when you think about your time in the NHL?
Ooh, that's a big question. But I think the things that kind of stand out when you look back to everything is the people you met, like the teammates that you got, the players you played against, but still became your friend. And I think that's pretty special in our league. Even though you're playing against them, it's still your teammate in some way. And just the last 3-4 days here, the amount of text messages or phone calls I got just reminds you of that again. It is a special league, and you know, I'm so grateful to be a part of it.
Who made you a better player to play against? Who is that guy you said, I hate playing against this guy, but he makes me a better player?
Ooh, Pavel Datsyuk, I think. You know, like me and Pav came in. He came in 1 year before me. But we were kind of the young guys in our team, and we clicked right away. And watching him in games, but also in practices, how he played, how he still plays, by the way. Just that two-way, the two-way play, and I don't know how many hours we've been taking the puck from each other, playing, you know, keep away after practices and stuff like that. So Pavel is a big part of my career, but there's so many others too. Draper, you know, face-off stuff and how to play, I would say, dirty, but in a nice way. But I think, you know, that it's stuff that you're, when you look back to it and you got it from someone because they either told you how to play or you learned from them by just watching them play.
Who won more keep away, you or Datsyuk?
Pavel, by far. No, I had to go outside the box and play dirty to win against him. Like if we played fair, I had no chance.
I admire your honesty. You know, so Yzerman, although he stepped away, he was a GM. Shanahan, president. Draper, assistant GM, will be a GM someday. Cleary's now in the front office in Detroit. Are you going to be, do you think, a GM someday?
I don't know. I honestly, I don't know. All this is, you know, is kind of fresh for me. The one thing that you miss out on playing professional hockey is your family and your friends. And that's my first one I'm going to focus on now and kind of take a step away and enjoy my family, enjoy my friends. But I wouldn't be shocked if I'm back in hockey in some kind of way eventually. You know, hockey brought me so much throughout my life. So I wouldn't be surprised if I'm back in hockey in some kind of way.
Is that in North America or that be in Sweden?
who knows? Mm-hmm. I guess it depends who wants me, I guess. But but you got to start somewhere and see how it is, and then we'll go from there.
Get your thoughts on Swedish hockey in general right now. It's in a different place than it was when you joined the NHL back in 2002. Rasmus Dahlin just selected first overall. He'll start with the Buffalo Sabres. He's been, as advertised, just a phenomenal hockey player. What are your thoughts on where Swedish hockey is at right now in 2018?
Well, it's in a good spot. Somehow we're developing players that are that come over here and become a big part of teams. And lately we got a lot of defensemen that are playing really well, and it's going to be good players here. And I think that had a lot to do with players like Nick Lidstrom, you know. Yeah. When I was growing up, I looked at Forsberg and Sundin and Alfredsson, and I'm pretty sure a lot of the players, young players, looked up to Lidstrom and kind of tried to mimic his game. But I think we have a good system over there with development with young kids on all different cities and clubs. So it's a good outcome right now, and hopefully we'll continue that way.
Henrik, just last one for me. One of the things I really enjoyed the most about you is I knew if I walked up to your stall and I had a question, I was going to get an honest answer. It was going to be blunt, and it was going to be honest. Number one, did anyone ever say to you, Henrik, you shouldn't have said that? Or B, well, I think more hockey players need to be that way. Don't be afraid to say what's on your mind. Do you think we'll get there?
I think so. But I think it also depending where you are in your career. But I also, in the end, I think, you know, the more honest I was, the more correct the answer was. And even though that we are in a tough spot last couple of years, I felt the more honest I could be, the more will people understand. Maybe there's a few one out there I regret a little bit, but but in the heat of the moment, too, you'll say stuff sometimes that maybe is wrong, but most of the time, I don't regret much.
What do you want people to say about you when they look back at your career? What would make you the proudest? What do you want them to say?
Oh, good teammate. I think that's what I value a lot, you know, be there for the guys. And I hope I've been there for my teammates. And hockey-wise, I'm not sure. I said this before a couple of days ago. I probably wasn't the flashiest player, but I was pretty decent all around. So that's the way I got brought up in Sweden. And you play a two-way game, and you try your hardest every night.
And you were a delight to watch. So much fun. Congratulations on a wonderful career. Congratulations on all the successes. And I think I speak for everybody when we say certainly respect, you know, go back and enjoy your family. But we'd love to see Henrik Zetterberg back in some capacity around hockey. We are poorer for your absence. Thank you so much for a wonderful career. And thanks so much for doing the podcast today.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
The GMC Sierra Denali sets a higher standard in a full-size pickup for purposeful technology and performance. Features like Apple CarPlay keeps you connected to what matters most, and an available 420-horsepower 6.2-liter engine gives you the power to take on any challenge. Lead the way like a pro with the GMC Sierra Denali. GMC, we are professional grade. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Just put a final thought. I mean, we'll still talk plenty about Henrik Zetterberg. I mean, you just don't not talk about Henrik Zetterberg just because he's not around this season. I mean, his influence will still be felt certainly within that Red Wings locker room. Thoughts on Henrik Zetterberg? How are you going to remember 40? I mean, 13 is gone, 5 is gone, now 40 is not in the number queue for Detroit.
Well, that Crosby thing is true. He did put up the number, even though Zetterberg. I really did feel that way. You know, what a great honor that somebody says, this is the guy I've got to train all summer to beat. Yeah. And then he did it well the next year. I think that's phenomenal. I mean, I remember years ago at Hockey Night, we did a piece on Hockey Town and whether or not, you know, Detroit struggles and, you know, what was going on and stuff like that. And I remember Babcock was still coaching them, and I said, "Your stars are Zetterberg and Datsyuk, I can't remember exactly what I said. Is it possible that fans just don't identify with them because they're not North American?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I think that is such a crock. Fans identify with great players. And, you know, there was a time between 2002 and 2008 when people questioned whether or not you could win with Zetterberg and Datsyuk.
100%.
And they proved you could do it, no problem. And I love that story, too, he told about chasing down sticks and trading sticks. And
for sure.
We had to pull it out of him. But, you know, I like the fact that he talked about the guys who he was hardest to play against, like Thornton.
Yeah.
I got to assume one of them was Chara, too.
You know, another big one would have been as well, I was waiting for it to come out of his mouth, was Yevgeny Malkin.
Yeah, Malkin. I thought Malkin was really good. Yeah. I liked how in the end of his career, I knew I could go to him and ask him a question. I was going to get a good answer.
Yeah.
He's a Hall of Famer for sure.
You know, some guys in retirement, you know, live off the grid and that's it. You never see him again. Boom, Kaiser Sose, he's gone. I just hope Zetterberg's not that guy. And I get the suspicion that based on the comments that he made, yeah, I'm going to take some time and do family, but hockey's hockey and I can see myself coming back, which is, you know, interesting because this is a wide brush thought here, but generally when Swedish hockey players go, they don't really come back. You know, Alfredson came back, Ulf Samuelsson came back, but generally Swedish hockey players go back home and they stay.
Yeah. You know, I can't see him being a guy who'll seek it out, put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it comes, it'll come to him.
Okay, let's get back to our where are they at conversation. We have moved to the Eastern Conference. We are in the Metropolitan. We are in Carolina, where they now find themselves with Dougie Hamilton, Michael Ferland, Adam Fox, courtesy of your Calgary Flames, Elliot.
The interesting thing here is I think Brendan Moore is really going to change the makeup. You know, he's a tough, in-your-face, challenge-you guy. You know, one of the reasons I know they targeted Ferland in that Calgary trade is that they felt they were soft, and they have to change that attitude. You know, Brendan Moore certainly isn't that guy. Ferland certainly isn't that guy. But I do think there's still a little bit of a question that, you know, players, agents, everywhere around the league has, you know, what exactly is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a player, all you can do or all you should do is focus on what's in front of your face and how do you improve and how do you win games. But I do think they look at what happened with Skinner and what may happen with Falk, and I think they're still a little bit unsure of where they're going as an organization.
Big on youth, big on getting a little bit tougher as well.
Yep.
Also, strong analytics bent. And you look at the gameplay, and this is true under Bill Peters. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be true under Rod Brind'Amour. Number one in shots on goal.
Yep.
Last season. And there was always, oh, look at Carolina, first period, warm up the Corsi, just, you know, throw pucks. But that's Carolina's game, and I can't really see that changing much.
No, I wouldn't see that changing much either. You know, their stats guy, Eric Tulski, he's smart. He's one of the best ones.
Tulski is one of the best.
One of the things I've really kind of noticed also on social media is a lot of those stats guys really tear into each other quite a bit. Like there's a bit of a territorial battle over whose stuff really works and whose stuff is complete hocus pocus.
You know where you saw that this summer?
Where?
The war debate.
Yes, the war debate, yes, which turned into a real eye glazer, I have to say.
Divided that community
I have been curious about that. Like I've started to notice it more, like,
yeah.
It starts as a thinly veiled shot, and then it becomes a not very thinly veiled shot.
Now, you can say all that is maybe aggressive peer review, though, Elliot.
Yes, okay, yes, just like universities. But like, there's a lot of respect for Tulski, and I would think that if Carolina, you know, figures something out, I could see him being a guy who would figure out what might really matter.
From Carolina, let's go to Columbus, where in a lot of ways, this is about bread and this is about Bob. They could be the kingmakers.
A bread Bob sandwich?
The bread Bob sandwich right there, Panarin and Bobrovsky. They could be kingmakers, or they could just, as you mentioned at the last podcast we did a million years ago, they might just push all the chips in and say, we're going for it.
There were guys who before training camp said to me, they don't think Jarmo Kekalainen will want to hold this. He'll just say, we're getting rid of these guys. I haven't spoken to him. There's a sense that's changing. I think they're going to go for it and see where they are. And that's what I would do. If I was in their shoes and I ran that team,
mm-hmm.
I would go for it and I would see where we are because I think they're good enough to win. Like, they're not on my list of five teams necessarily could win the Stanley Cup, but I look at Columbus as being in the next tier as if, like, why can't they be Washington? Why right. can't they be the team that finally breaks through and goes? I think the two biggest questions I have about them is, You know, number one, Panarin looks like, hey, I know this is a big year for me. I'm all in. I'm going to have a big year, and I'll go get my money somewhere. I didn't like what Bobrovsky said.
Yeah, so you have told them what your plans are?
Yeah, they know exactly what we're going to do.
And what is that?
You have to ask them.
Okay. So you've told them what your plans are even beyond this current contract? Like, has it gone that far? Like,
well, they know my plans.
Okay.
Will there be any talk with them during the season?
I don't like, I won't talk. I don't like to play any games, mind games or stuff like that. So, as I said, I feel to be fair to say early enough them what I wanted to do, how I gonna do the things, and just tell them what, my point of view, you know.
To me, it struck me as, and I always worry about a guy whose English is his second language because you don't know what you're missing.
Sure, yeah.
But he just struck me as a guy who was mad at them. He didn't show up for at least one meeting in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
He said in his opening scrum he was mad that they suggested he maybe see a sports psychologist. It just struck me as, oof, this guy is not coming here in the right frame of mind. So that would worry me a little bit. The second thing I would be concerned about, and only they know this, not us, is what is the effect that all this has on their dressing room? Are there guys there who are signed or aren't in good position and saying, like, seriously, what is going on here?
I could see Nick Foligno being that guy. I could see Foligno saying, hey, what's this?
I could see a lot of guys there being like that. And my call is we go for it. And I'm saying to all these guys, you might have different philosophies on where you're going, but right now the right path for all of you to get there is to win.
Mm-hmm.
And we're good enough. We have a good team here. You know, Marcus Wenberg said to me a couple weeks ago at the League Players Media Tour in Sweden, it's not like we're that bad. We keep losing to really good teams.
Mm-hmm.
Go. And then sort it out later.
You have a thought on the extensions off the ice? Whether it's John Tortorella.
That's the way they did it last time. They extended everybody with a year to go. Yep. What I thought was most interesting, and I do agree with that. I think generally those guys do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what's interesting is last time they gave us a term. This year, this time they didn't. I thought that was fascinating.
New Jersey Devils, is this the same conversation we just had about the Colorado Avalanche and them coming back down to earth a little bit?
They didn't do a lot this year. They lost John Moore, was a good player for them last year. To me, that says they're looking at Taylor Hall. They can sign him next July, and they're saying, we're taking care of that business first, and we're worrying about everything else after that. You know, I agree. I think you had a great year last year. There's nothing that says you can't have a great year this year. But I think you're still trying to find out, okay, what are we really?
Jesper Bratt's come in with about 10 pounds of muscle. Have you seen Bratt?
No.
Looks good.
But I believe it.
Looks real good.
I mean, the guy who makes it the way he made it last year is a guy who takes things very seriously.
Yeah.
But to me, it looks like we're dealing with Taylor Hall first, and everything else is going to fall into place.
Every year, there's one player who comes in as a rookie, recently drafted, and you say, well, he's ticketed to go back to junior or wherever, and ends up staying for the nine or maybe plus. I wonder if Ty Smith can be that guy this year. The way that he skates, given that blue line, I have a strong suspicion that Ty Smith starts the year with the New Jersey Devils.
Does
he get past nine?
Well, you know, yes. He's an interesting guy because I had heard that if Edmonton hadn't gotten Bouchard,
Ty Smith
was probably going to be their pick. So I'm curious about him. I'm curious to see it. The Miles Wood thing, too, as we record this, it doesn't sound like
how big a gap is there?
That's a weird one. Like, Ray Shearer made it sound like they actually agree on some things, but not others. I get it. He's a big spark plug for them.
Sure is.
I just wonder.
New York Islanders, John Tavares, okay, that conversation. But there is still a Matthew Barzal there. However, the entire hockey world is expecting the floor to fall out from underneath the Islanders this season. Do you see it, or do you say they're not as bad as people say?
I don't think they're as bad as people say, but I think it's going to be tough for them because I think Lamoriello, I understand why Lamoriello is saying what he's saying because everybody there is shell-shocked. And he's telling their fans who are devastated they lost him, what are we going to do, that he's trying to sell that this isn't that bad.
We only won one round with him, so who cares?
Yeah, I don't get offended at that stuff. I know what he's doing. I actually think Tavares is interesting. He's basically said the same tack. I haven't won anything. Mm-hmm. So none of that stuff bothers me. I just think that whole organization is so shell-shocked and so stunned about what happened that it might be tough to get them going in the same direction. You know, Tavares covered up for a lot of other people. He made a lot of other people look good. You know,
made a lot of other people rich.
And made a lot of other people rich. And now he's not there. He's not the safety blanket. Look, in Montreal, they didn't realize the unintended consequences of trading P.K. Subban.
Mm-hmm.
That the guy who took all the heat for everybody else was suddenly gone. Tavares didn't necessarily take heat, but he did so much to make everybody better. And it'll be interesting to see how Barzal handles that. I think he's really talented. I think he's going to be really good. But now all of a sudden he's going to be thrust into being
the guy,
the number one guy. You know, I think Robin Leonard is now one of the more interesting stories in the NHL this year because he put himself out there. I do think that if I was to put money on it now, and I'm not saying I'm going to be right, but if I had to place an early season wager, I think that's the team that's all in for Bobrovsky.
The Islanders.
Yes.
What do you think of the Leonard piece?
I think it takes a lot of balls to put yourself out there.
Because
like
we've all heard about Leonard. And I remember, you know, last year after, you know, someone called me after the Detroit game and essentially saying we can't find him.
Yes.
He's gone.
Yes.
Like we don't know. And there was always a whispers of, you know, who is this guy? What's he all about? And now it kind of all finally makes sense.
I think Leonard also had to know that, you know, he was coming to the end. That his number of chances were over. I think that one of the things I really liked in that piece was Jason Botterill following up with him throughout the summer to see he was doing okay, even after Buffalo made the decision they were going to move on.
Yeah.
I think Robin Leonard, in some ways, he was saving his own career by saying, everybody is sitting here wondering, you know, what's wrong with me? Well, now I can tell you. And look, we all want to play in the NHL. It's more important that you're a good husband and father. And you can't be a good husband and father unless you're honest with yourself about what is causing you all these problems. And I think if he finds peace at home, which it sounds like from that article that he's getting towards, I think the play will come.
Rangers, David Quinn behind the bench, and it is rebuild time in the Big Apple, something that we haven't heard in quite some time.
You know, I like David Quinn. You know, one of the reasons I heard they went out and they got Adam McQuaid was because he thought they were really soft to play against last year, especially in front of their net. You know, I bet you Henrik Lundqvist liked hearing that.
Yeah.
You remember what he was like at the end of the after they got at the trade over last year?
Snapcase.
But I gave him credit because he was playing hard. He was trying to set a good example for the young kids, but he was getting 50 shots every night.
Mm-hmm.
And he played unreal. People hear me say that they're going to be tough. It's Adam McQuaid, like, you're a caveman. I still think there is room for intimidation and toughness in sports. Like, I think a lot of sports, being successful is, can you gain a mental edge on someone else? And intimidation is a big part of that. I think when you're a rebuilding team, you have to establish that you're not coming in here, downtown Manhattan, getting a good steak two blocks away and kicking our butts the next night.
And taking 2 points home.
Yes. Like, you got to set a tone that we are setting a way we're going to play and we're going to get better and you're going to hate playing against us. I like that. Like, you know, the Rangers made it so that he couldn't say no, but I like what he started with earlier this year. Now, can he reach the Buchnevichs? Can he take them to the next level? That's the question. But I like what I'm hearing from him so far.
You know what? I like a lot of the college coaches that have been hired. I spent some time with Jim Montgomery at the draft. Really like him. I like what I'm hearing about David Quinn as well. And although I was sort of skeptical about it at first, I like Dave Haxtell. Like, long gone are the days of, okay, we tried with Ned Harkness. College coaches don't work at the NHL level. Let's just stop. We talked about this last year a little bit. Is that the next wave? For a while, it was hire the AHL guy.
I think the next wave is, can you communicate? Can you get your
message? Talk to kids.
The thing I liked about Haxtell, Dave Haxtell, most last year is he had that city screaming for his head, and he just
never changed.
Went right through it. That's hard to do.
Speaking of the Philadelphia Flyers,
yeah,
let's get there. Looked real good. There is a question about Wayne Simmonds, where he fits.
Yep.
In
and
the
you
lineup
go and you
or on
Jan
or on
Van
the team.
Riemsdyk last year.
Van Riemsdyk comes in.
Who's a net front guy like Simmonds is,
right? For years and years, they've looked for the goaltender. They have it. We just don't know when he's going to be ready, and that's Carter Hart.
Yep.
And then there's the question of the back end as well. Where are you at with Philadelphia?
Somebody told me also, too, that before they signed Van Riemsdyk, Philly tried to take a run at Panarin.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I wonder what that would have cost.
Yeah, but, you know, obviously it didn't happen.
Right?
Yeah, that they were looking at it. I got a better chance of finding out the nuclear codes than finding that out from Hextall. But I'd heard that. Like, that was one of the rumors going around that they looked at him. I think this team is fascinating. I mean, I think they're doing it the right way. They're building up. You know, he's very patient. Obviously, Hextall is. That game six against Pittsburgh last year was wild.
Yeah.
I mean, I really like Couturier. I love Provorov. Like, what a player that guy is.
It's going to be Norris one day.
Yeah. I mean, Gostisbehere didn't have as great a year last year. But I love Giroux. Like, Hextall challenged Giroux, moved him. Giroux had an MVP level year. He was third on my ballot.
Mm-hmm. Couturier had a fantastic year.
He had a great
second
year.
Second half, Nolan Patrick looking real good.
Nolan Patrick came on. I don't know if they put it all together yet, but I think they're coming.
Philip Myers looks real good. Maybe to crack the lineup this year.
The goaltending could completely undo them.
They may have the best one.
But until he's ready.
It doesn't seem like an organization's going to rush anything. Though.
No.
Like, he'll start in the American League.
And in that city, that's hard. It's hard not to rush there. But I like their process. I just don't know, are they ready to win yet? I don't know.
Pittsburgh Penguins, they're bringing Jack Johnson.
The one thing is, I saw, you know, Crosby and Malkin at the event in Chicago, the league and players meeting, and those guys look refreshed. I heard the story. Like, we talked about this. They should have brought Pittsburgh in for the cup banner raising.
Oh, I agree. And, oh, are you kidding?
And
for
I
sure.
know. And I know.
That would have been great.
Now, I don't know that Washington asked for it or what. I don't know that. Don't even, like, you friggin' aggregators, don't kill me on this one. But the one thing I do know is that the league, at least internally, asked the question, should it be Pittsburgh? And they just said it's not the right thing to do, and they put Boston there. But I will tell you this, they won't say it, but seeing Washington win the cup last year, I think those guys were happy for Ovechkin. They understand climbing the mountain and how great it feels.
Yeah.
But I think those guys were like, yeah, it was Washington.
Listen, you talked about Sidney Crosby putting a picture of Henrik Zetterberg on the wall at his gym. Have the Pittsburgh Penguins stand there on the blue line while the banner gets raised.
Yeah.
In Washington.
Yeah. I do think that the league kind of said, we're not doing that.
Oh, it would have been spectacular.
But, you know, I'll tell you this. You know who I think has a lot to prove there this year is Brassard. I think Derek had a year where it didn't go well for him. I think Pittsburgh might have looked at, can we move this guy? But they didn't, and I think he's going to have a big year.
Thought on Kessel? A lot of speculation about him, him moving on.
Same
last
old
year.
Bleep, man. Like, what a quote.
Great line.
I think Rutherford's the kind of guy, he'll do anything.
Yeah,
he'll do anything. If he thinks it makes them better, he'll do anything.
Mention the Washington Capitals. Get to them. A couple of big. Todd Reardon ends up taking over Barry Trotz exits. We talked about that on the last podcast. Tom Wilson, 6-year contract, $31 million. John Carlson, 8 times 8, $64 million. Zero in bonus, by the way, on that deal.
Yeah. Same as Nashville. They didn't give a bonus.
Makes the NHL happy. You know,
I think the biggest
protection.
Question is, are they going to be hung over? Literally. Like,
still,
are they still hung over? You know, I just think the thing is, like, that team, they went through so much to get there. And it's rare you see everybody happy that the team won. I think, you know, that's probably about as happy as you can get in a competitive league to see a team win.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, the biggest question I have is, are they going to be hungry? When they finally beat Pittsburgh last year, even with Backstrom out, they could smell it.
Yeah.
Like, they knew it. They're like, we could win this. They shut out Tampa Bay back-to-back in game 6 and 7. You know, like, I look at this as, do they have it? Like, are they still going to be there, or are they satisfied?
It's the rule of Rocky. Staying there is harder than getting there.
Yeah.
Can you do it again? To the Atlantic, we'll finish up in that division. The Boston Bruins, in on Tavares, in on Kovalchuk, true or false?
True, both. I think Nashville and Winnipeg are the two best teams in any one division.
Yeah.
I think this is probably the three, maybe four best teams in any one division. I think Boston, Tampa, Toronto, and I like Florida a lot. I think those four are the best four, top four.
Last three cups come from the Metro. I can hear the screams right now. How can you say that, guys? Last three cups come from the Metropolitan.
I just think that you have Washington, you have Pittsburgh, and I do like Columbus, as you heard me say, but yeah. I think that fourth, it's here.
As you mentioned, McQuaid out, he goes to the Rangers. John Moore comes in. What are your questions about the Boston Bruins this year?
I just think the biggest thing about them is health. You know, Bergeron's not starting the season healthy. You know, Chara, you know, Carlo got hurt last year. McAvoy's a really talented guy. He gets some freak things that happen to him. Rask being at his level. Marchand, like, you know, control yourself. You're an MVP level player.
No more licks.
I just think that with them, it always seems to be like stuff that you wouldn't normally predict. Freak injuries, health, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they've done a good job of filling from within. They've got a lot of good young players.
Buffalo Sabres are a fascinating squad. Jack Eichel, I know it's preseason, but he looks fantastic so far.
Don't judge anything by the first week.
I get that, but I'll say the same thing about Rasmus Dahlin. Yeah, he looks fantastic so far. Some questions perhaps about production from Casey Mittelstadt previous to turning pro, but we'll see what happens.
Better, but not there yet.
This is, you know, the Tim Murray Buffalo Sabres almost seemed as if they were built from that last generation of hockey. Generation is too strong. The last, I don't know, 15 years of hockey, it was a trying to build like a big, tough team, but one that didn't have the premium on speed or quickness. It seems as if Buffalo is going the exact opposite direction under Jason Botterill. That it is speed. You saw that with the Skinner deal. You saw them drafting Casey Mittelstadt. Eichel was, of course, already there. Rasmus Dahlin. I mean, you win the lottery, you get Rasmus Dahlin. But it seems as if they are going for speed, speed, speed. That's what Buffalo wants.
And I can't argue with that. Speed causes problems. And they've also been kind of a bit of a plodding team. I think also it's a change in attitude. And those guys that they got, Skinner and the two veterans, Sobotka and Berglund from St. Louis, those are guys who needed changes. And, you know, Skinner's a year away from unrestricted free agency, a big year, and he cashes in.
Plays with Jack Eichel, Tommy's not going to resign?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And he's close to home, which will help him.
Like from Markham.
His dad, who's Andrew, who's always at the games in Toronto, that'll be easy. He gets more games he can go close to. I do believe that they'll be better. I don't think they're a playoff team yet, but I do think they took a big step this summer.
Was Connor Sheary a theft?
Well, it was to take Hunwick's contract,
sure.
Right? But I think Connor Sheary is a perfect complementary wing. Absolutely. I like him a lot.
Upper body injury, yeah. I think, there. So he's a question to start the season.
I wonder if it's one of those, I don't feel like playing in training.
You know what? I'm not going to sign my contract until physicals are done. I like that. That's my personal favorite move, by
Bell,
the way.
Le'Veon Bell.
They have, there are two teams with multiple first round picks. Colorado was one of them is the Ottawa Senators pick. Buffalo's got three. Buffalo's got three firsts. So they still have some.
San Jose
and St. Louis.
Oh, right.
So, and they have their own pick. Like, Buffalo's looking good still with three first round
building
picks
up
this year. Sam Reinhart, you talked about this on Twitter earlier on today, breaking it 2 years, 3.6 is the AAV on that one. Thought on that latest one.
You know, contract. It's interesting. A lot of the Buffalo guys, fans thought it was going to come in around four, and another GM said that they thought that was a little bit high, that he thought it was probably about 3.25. So that's probably good. That means everybody's happy and unhappy. You know what? Sam Reinhart, that's Buffalo saying to him, yeah, we don't know.
Going back to Edmonton, is that Edmonton saying we don't know about Darnell Nurse?
No,
on the
I don't think it was we don't know about Darnell Nurse. I wouldn't be surprised if Nurse was happy to take a bridge deal too. I think in Edmonton, one of the things is they didn't want to put Sakara on LTI, so they had to squeeze that one in pretty tight.
To Detroit. They have challenges, and a lot of their challenges are on their blue line.
Yeah.
I look at the blue line, and we just talked to Henrik Zetterberg a second ago, and he referenced Nicholas Cronwall. This has got to be the last lap for Nicholas Cronwall as well.
Starting over.
And Dan Bylsma comes on as an assistant.
Yeah.
Which, should we read anything into that, Elliot?
Well, I think that's going to be there all the time, but I don't know. I think that Blashill and Bylsma get along pretty well, and you hope that that's not. You know, I remember last year, one of my real tough moments last year was I had heard Blashill was in trouble, and if he was out, you know, who might go in there for him. And, you know, Ken Holland, he was not thrilled at me for that one. He was like, nope, I defend this guy. And Ken Holland has been very loyal to Jeff Blashill. And, I mean, I understand why everybody says it. It makes a lot of sense. But I kind of look at Ken Holland as a guy who's, the way he talked about Blashill there, I'm not sure that he would do it with that much intent. By the way, Detroit, as tough as it's been, that draft worked out really nicely for them.
Are you kidding? I mean, the Islanders...
Zadina just dropped into their lap.
Well, there were the two teams, right? The Islanders and the Detroit Red Wings didn't have to draft.
Yeah.
The players just fell into their laps.
Yeah. And then Valeno later on.
Sure, Valeno.
So I know they were really ecstatic, and that's a way to start. You know, I do want to say something about Ken Holland, because, you know, all the talk is coming again with Yzerman going home and where he's going to be in a year. I had a couple conversations with Holland, and one was about the Blashill, but one was another one later in the year. And, you know, I think it bothers him a lot about how some fans want him out. I think it means a lot to him to get a chance to restart. You know, Detroit was always hanging on, and affected their decisions. Yeah. I think Ken Holland feels that Detroit's been really good for him. He owes a lot to them. He's done a lot for them. But he really wants this chance to start this rebuild. And I think that it meant a lot to him last year that that draft worked out as well as it did.
It was great for Detroit.
And you can say it was his doing or it wasn't his doing, whatever it was. The thing is, like, Zadina dropped into his lap, and he could have gone and said, you know, we're taking a center or a D because that was our plan and that's what we told people. And it's like,
but
no, this guy dropped in our lap, and we're deviating from the plan. We're going with it.
Florida Panthers, if there's a team that when I'm asked, who do you think could be stealth candidate to surprise people
really
in their
good
division, I go Florida Panthers. Because now you've added Mike Hoffman to that mix, and all of a sudden that top six looks deadly.
Yeah, they're a really good team.
They're a good squad.
I love Trocheck, too. I'm a big Trocheck guy. Just don't start badly.
Stay healthy.
Stay healthy,
please.
Especially the guy in goal, the two guys in goal.
Two guys in goal. And Jonathan Huberdeau, who's one of the sneakiest top wingers in the NHL, who I absolutely love. Just stay healthy.
One of the stories I was told actually about Toronto was that, you know, before they got Tavares in their internal meetings, there were people who were saying, you know, everyone's talking about our D. If we don't get a center, we're not going to beat Florida next year. And then, like, Tavares dropped onto their lap and solved that problem. But I heard that that's one of the things they were really worried about, was that before they got Tavares, when they knew that they were probably losing Bozak and whatever else was going to happen, they were worried that their center depth was going to hurt them with the Panthers.
I think they're good, man. You look at those top three in the Atlantic, and it's, you know, Tampa and Boston and Toronto. I mean, don't hesitate to throw Tampa into that mix. I just think they're that good.
Oh, of course. Well, we just haven't gotten there alphabetically.
We're getting there. We got to go Montreal first.
Yeah.
And, you know, the big story this, of course, in this offseason, Max Pacioretty off to the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a rebuild. And, I mean, they'll go as far as Price can take them.
It's not what Weber and Price signed up for.
Yeah, but it's a huge superhuman task. You know, I think the one thing, obviously, is that, you know, Price has come determined. And he's kind of got this weird way about him where if he has a bad year, he usually comes back with a great one. I think the biggest thing is, you know, we've talked about Ottawa and the crisis of consumer confidence they have there in their owner. Montreal, unfortunately for them, has that to a lesser degree. And
about the owner, about the general manager?
About the GM. And, you know, I really don't like kicking people when they're down. I think everybody knows that right now that fan base is just not buying into what they're selling. It's the same problem that Ottawa's got.
What did you make of the Galchenyuk-Domi deal from Montreal's point of view?
Look, the toughest thing about playing in Montreal is that there's so many stories about what's going on around the player off the ice that you don't know what's true, right?
Right.
You get sucked into that world, like, oh, you hear player this about player A and this about player B, and hear where they were last night or they're with last night, or there's problems in the marriage or whatever. Like, you don't know what's true. The one thing I do believe is that by the end of last year, Galchenyuk just looked spent. He needed a change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Max Domi needed a change too. I think you're looking at two guys, their organizations weren't happy with them and they weren't happy in their organization. So you try your chance. You know, I think Max Domi's got the kind of personality to handle playing in Montreal.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I think that Galchenyuk needed a chance. I just don't know if, you know, the tough thing is they got to find a center. And now they're talking about Domi being a center. That's a tough one for him. Look, you just traded for Drouin. You put him at center.
Didn't work.
And it made it tough on Drouin. Now you're going to take Domi there, play him at center. It's going to be tougher on him, too.
you know, and people are screaming at the podcast right now saying, well, they just traded a center to Arizona. I mean, part of the problem there was he was false started so many different
times.
Well,
we'll see if Galchenyuk's a center. I know Arizona will give him the chance and they believe it is, but we're going to find out.
That's why, see, there's a lot of reasons why Arizona is one of the more fascinating teams for me to watch this year. And towards the end, I loved watching Coyotes, and this year, I'm going to love watching Coyotes to start just to see Galchenyuk.
I think they're going to make the playoffs, a pick that could flop, but I like them. I think they're a good team.
Ottawa Senators and the video.
I didn't know which video you were talking about, the Melnick one or the Dorion one.
The Dorion one with you and David in a couple of seconds here. But the video with Borowiecki, who I think, by the way, is an outstanding guy.
You know,
like, he's such a nice guy. And I'm saying to myself, and I'm watching Kraft Hockeyville, and I'm saying to myself, how many guys are giving it to him on the ice about the video?
You know what? I didn't see a lot of it. You know, he ran over Cracknell right away to announce his presence. You know, first of all, here's a guy who's a total long shot who just got himself a multi-million-dollar, multi-year deal. So it's hard not to respect that. Apparently, they asked him if he would do it, and he said fine to help the team. And,
Ottawa guy.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's a lot of that, the hometown pride.
For sure. And those fresh braces, I mean, they bring energy.
Yeah, I know.
For a guy like me who in the hockey world's a little bit older, you know, it gives me so much energy, and, you know, I'm excited to come to the rink when those guys are.
You're excited because they're excited.
100%. Right. You know, I'm excited to be with them, to hang out with them, to play with them. I think it goes a long way for everyone.
So you get excited because they're excited. It gets me excited, gets all of our fans excited, and our sponsors. So it's going to work out. I think we're looking forward to a great, great coming year. I really think that the fans are going to be supportive. We got some great fans. These are great, great hockey fans, great sponsors. And we just got to give them the hope that they know that we know what we're doing, and that translates into the team knowing what they're doing and putting some wins together.
I agree.
Shooting for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, love
no
it.
Less.
It's awesome.
All right. Listen, awesome. Thanks very
Thank
much.
You.
It goes to what we were talking about with Montreal. There's nothing Eugene Melnick can do to make people believe in him. Nothing. They just aren't going to buy what he's selling.
So if you're working in the marketing department, despite the fact that the owner is saying, I have this great idea, I'm going to throw on an Ottawa Senators jersey from 10 years ago and sit next to local boy Mark Borowiecki and try to sell the rebuild to fans. There is nothing anyone in the organization can do to stop him from doing that.
Because it seems
as if what Eugene wants to do,
Jeff,
Eugene will do.
I think that generally happens. I know that happened with the Senator, the Centurion, in the playoffs a few years ago. I'd heard that someone had said to him, this is not going to work, and he said, I don't care, I want to do it. I said that in a couple of places. I think I said it on Primetime. I think I said it on Tim and Sid. I did have people who pushed back and say, like, this was not one that Eugene Melnick forced down our throats. There are people there who said that we had to do something because we knew the Carlson trade was coming, and we just figured that this was the thing to try. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work. And, you know, like, now we have the Dorion interview from the other night.
Pierre, what's the number one thing you're optimistic about in terms of the Ottawa Senators?
We're a team.
You're at a point where nothing you can do will work. You can try whatever you want. Like, Pierre Dorion comes on, and that pause, because it's Pierre Dorion at this point in time, it's viral.
What did you think?
So,
David asked the question, and there's that. I'm watching this. I'm like, whoa,
well, cause
this
people
is
started,
really uncomfortable.
People started tweeting like, oh, nice look, Friedman. Like, you're not buying what he's selling. You know what I was thinking was? I was thinking that, okay, I better be ready to say something in case he can't say anything. Like, David and I talked about that later as it started going nuts. Like, we were both thinking, are we going to have to jump in here because of whatever reason? That's what I was thinking. Like, I didn't, like, sitting there live, I didn't think anything of it, but be ready in case, you know, for whatever reason, I can't say anything. But the moment it was over, I started getting texts about it, and I was like, all right. And then in the first intermission, people started sending me some of the stuff that was going on Twitter. And like I said, I don't like kicking people when they're down. And they're at a point right now, the Ottawa Senators, where nothing they can sell works. They just have to go through the process.
You know what I think part of that is? I don't think you can start a rebuild until the draft is over. story continues and will continue all season long.
You know,
you can talk about the future.
Yes.
You don't have your first pick, and it might be first overall.
And I really felt that they should have done it.
End the story.
For that reason, too. Like, if you're going to trade Carlson, you know it. And also, the story doesn't hang over you. We asked the question last night, and...
No, there's no regrets at all. When you're rebuilding, and you get it to build with a cornerstone piece like Brady Tkachuk, and we don't want to put too much pressure on him. He's only 19 years old yet, 2 days ago. There's no hesitation. Brady brings the whole package. There's no doubt that for this organization, keeping the pick and picking Brady Tkachuk was a no-brainer.
Like, the Tkachuks are special. There's no question about that.
Oh, man.
Like, you know, they have raised a couple of pretty incredible kids in Matt and Brady. I just wish this had gone away for their sakes, because every time they lose a game, it's going to hang over them.
The whole organization.
Yeah.
Like, normal rebuilds, fans can be kind of okay with extended losing periods because there's a reward at the end.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reward at the end this year.
No.
There's more pain.
Well, and that's why I think, like, I know they're going to try to sign Stone and they're going to try to sign Duchene. I just wonder, if it doesn't work, do those become the players who get you first-round picks? Now, the guys who are trading for them this year are going to be guys who probably won't have high first-round picks, but you try to accumulate as many as you can.
You do need to probably have something so you can get up on the stage in Vancouver on the Friday night.
Yeah,
I know they're licking their chops in London. Brady Tkachuk stay the year in Ottawa?
I asked Dorian that last night, and you know, people were texting me right away. They're like, no chance he's going back to London. It was a good question to ask for the broadcast, I thought, because we were right there. But no chance.
Tampa. They tried for Erik Karlsson.
Yep.
I think many were surprised that he didn't end up there. But, you know, the big story was kind of a shocker that dropped in everybody's...
We knew that now that the price for the East was higher.
Yep. Why should it be?
I
don't understand that now at all.
I think you take your best deal.
With you. Okay, so no to Erik Karlsson. The big story, though, Steve Yzerman stepping down as general manager and Julian Brisebois takes over.
You know, I understand Yzerman's position. If he took a 5-year deal, it would be, 14 years in Tampa away from his family full-time? Like, I get that. That's a lot to ask. His daughters are getting older. I totally understand.
They're all in
that.
College?
I think the youngest is 19. The oldest is 24, I think. So, I get that. Like, because then it comes to a point where, you know, kids are like, you know, I don't want to come to Tampa to see you on the weekend. I just rather hang out here and do my own adult thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I do understand Yzerman's position. I got to think that Jeff Vinnick was sitting there and saying, sooner or later,
Brisebois is gone.
Somebody's coming for Julian Brisebois, whether it's Montreal or someone else.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you lose Yzerman, you lose Brisebois, and you're like, what?
Woo-hoo.
So I think you said we can't lose both. I do think that was a factor. I'll tell you something else. Since that all happened, you know, someone said to me, you do not understand how much losing Game 6 and Game 7, you know, ripped through that organization. To Washington last year in the mm-hmm. Eastern Final. And I think there were a lot. I mean, you keep going because you're a heck of a team and you're built to give yourself chances. But I do think that there were a lot of disappointed people in the way they lost last year. I think it made, I don't know if it made them question who they were or how good they were or anything like that.
But they didn't do anything about it, though.
I know
they tried for Karlsson, but it's not. I mean, they're coming back with the same squad.
It's
tough. Which is fine. It's a good team.
It's tough because you're sitting there and you're saying, we've got great players. What are you going to do? You're not getting rid of some of those guys. But they got shut out back-to-back, too. They lost one game 3-0, and they lost the other game 4-0. I think internally they were like, what happened here?
Jake Dotson's situation is an interesting one. 25 pounds?
Yeah, I mentioned this on Vancouver Radio last night. And, you know, I would just like to say that the other thing I said in that show is that...
Sportsnet 650.
I don't want to sound like I'm making fun of the guy because I'm way too fat myself. Like, I should be in much better shape. So I don't want anyone to think I'm making fun of Jake Dotson. But... from what I heard, it was extreme. Like, it wasn't that he was just out of shape, that he was extremely out of shape.
When it got reported he was on waivers, I had two teams, Jeff, who texted me right away and said, what's going on here? Like, we'd be interested in this guy. What's happening?
Yeah.
And so, you know, we reported that they were unhappy with his conditioning. And then, you know, Tampa wasn't commenting, so it made it harder. And then as the day went on, things started trickling in. And one team told me that was exactly what they had heard, that, you know, he came in 25% body fat. Another team told me they heard, like, he was 45 pounds overweight.
And he's a big guy to begin with.
So,
like, 45?
45 was the number they used to me. So what that says to me is, even if that's not true, it's in that direction. Like, it was an egregious thing. And I don't know if they're going to win this. I think if you're the Players Association, you have to grieve it. You cannot allow this precedent.
Sure.
But I do think that we are dealing with something that is extremely out of the ordinary.
It winks at the philosophical question, do you have to be in quote-unquote good shape to play this game?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Do you?
Yes.
If you can play, if you can suit up and if you can keep up and you can still maintain that same level.
I think
level
you
of,
can do it. For, the way the NHL is played now, Jeff. Like,
I get it, but what if you just can?
I think there's always going to be outliers, okay? Like, there's always going to be people who can show up, smoke two packs of cigarettes, and go out there and score five goals. There's always going to be that guy.
Yeah.
But Jake Dodgson, I think he's a player. I know he played sometimes on the first pairing, but he's not a top pairing guy.
I get that.
Like, there's, you're going to take that from, hey, if Victor Hedman's the kind of guy who shows up with, you know, 20% body fat, not that he ever would, smoking cigarettes and wants to go on the ice, you're going to say, okay, that's our Norris Trophy winner. We're going to put up with that.
I was going to say, what if Kucherov shows up with a barrel or, yeah, you know, Stamkos
but
or whatever.
But you're not doing that. And now the other thing, too, is there's something else that happened in the past, and we don't know what that is. But I think the thing we're all wondering here is this a cumulative thing? I don't know. I don't have all the answers. I was just told it was a really egregious fail. And like some teams said, they heard that they were talking about things up to like 25% body fat and maybe 45 pounds overweight. I mean, God only knows what is true. And again, I don't want to make fun of the guy because I'm way too fat. But there's something here.
Finish up with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, I mean,
John Tavares, and
I got a text last night from a buddy at the end of the broadcast. He says, I am sick of the Maple Leafs already.
like we've left them to last.
And you know,
people have dropped off the podcast but, after hearing about their team.
But they are a target. They are the target this year. Everybody is sick of hearing about the Maple Leafs who isn't a Maple Leaf fan.
Oh, and the season hasn't even started.
And the season hasn't even started.
Hang on. You thought Pittsburgh and Washington were vicious?
Like, teams
are coming
after these guys. Like, you know, I asked Taze and Kane about what it's like to be the targets, and Taze had a good line. He says, like, you know, when this happens, like, it's not about potential anymore.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
about what you do. And I like Tavares has been good about it. He's saying, like, you know, hey, I haven't won a thing, but it's going to be interesting. I think they're really good. I think they do have a chance. I think they want to see what happens internally defensively before they go out and do anything.
Yep.
They're going to get everyone's best this year.
Do you, because Toronto Sports Radio is all over the topic, you have a feeling on William Nylander one way or another?
I think the Maple Leafs have prepared that it goes into the season.
That it goes into the season?
Yes. I think they are preparing for it to go into the season.
The
maybe
Leafs
it doesn't.
Maybe. Does Camp Nylander?
You know, I'll tell you this. Louis Gross, he's no shrinking violet.
Yep.
Michael Nylander is no shrinking violet. I think the Maple Leafs are preparing for the possibility this goes into the season. Maybe it doesn't, but I think they're prepared for it.
Finish up on this one, and next week we'll do some more. We'll do some Ask 31s.
Yeah, we're way long today.
I hate to end it on the downer topic, but all season long, how much do you think we'll be hearing about reopening the CBA? There, I said it.
It's going to happen. I do believe negotiations are going to start before the new year.
And you have a feeling one way or another whether it gets, that's it, go home,
well,
boys?
Well, I don't think the owners are going to open it. Why would they?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I believe is the Players Association is going to meet with all the players. I do think that they're going to ask them, what do you want to win here?
I was going to say, do they have a let's go home topic?
I understand the escrow upsets them, and I get it. Believe me, if I didn't know what I was going to be making for the four quarters of the year, one quarter I'm making this, one quarter I'm making this, one quarter, like, that would bother me too. But in the grand scheme of things, you're doing okay. I think what the players and the owners should both be saying to each other is, are we doing the most possible to grow the game?
Yeah, you talked about that last time.
And I believe that's the question they should be asking each other is, are we doing the most to grow the game? Because the only way it's going to get more successful is that. But I do believe we will see some negotiations. I would like to see it before the new year. Now that I think about it, maybe not. But I do think it's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Is there one big story you're most interested in? Like, to me, I'm fascinated with the Columbus story and which way they go.
Yep.
And if it's, well, you know what, we have to get rid of these guys, what they end up getting. But is there one for you around the NHL, look, everywhere, where you're like, this is my big story?
This is going to make everybody sick, but the biggest story in the to me is Tavares in Toronto. I was born in Toronto, raised in Toronto, lived most of my life in Toronto. I'm not a huge Leaf fan. I grew up a Blackhawk fan. To me, this is a huge story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's your biggest market. It's a great player leaving in the prime of his career. It's a city starved for success. It's a huge story.
What was it like in Lucan last night? I haven't even asked you that.
Oh, they were those people were great. And the other thing too is before the first game, Tavares likes his spot in the power play, and Marner likes his spot in the power play. Tavares is the guy that moves. Like, to me, that says a lot.
Sure.
I loved it. You know, I said at the beginning of the broadcast, all the people who listen to this who live in smaller cities, like I said, I've lived most of my life in Toronto. The thing I learned when I started working at Hockey Night is the farther you move out of the big city, those are hockey's biggest fans and our most hardcore viewers. And it's important to take the game to them. Like, those games in Lucan, they're important because those people are appreciative. And other fans in small towns say, someday that could be us. That's a reward for them. I remember when Ronaldo came to North America on an exhibition tour, and he was playing like 20 minutes of games. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, what's the big deal? And a soccer fan said to me, he's here.
Right.
Like, we don't get that.
It's funny, Dello mentioned this on, Tyler Dello from The Athletic mentioned this on Twitter today. He said, like, considering what Elliot's just talking about here, considering how big it is and what it means to those communities, why doesn't every single Canadian team do this every year? They make Kraft Hockeyville a week. And Calgary's playing somewhere.
Well, I don't think it should just be in Canada. I think it should be everywhere.
Every NHL team?
Every NHL team should be, as much as you possibly can, you should be going to a small town somewhere in your state or your province.
All right, plenty more ideas to come in season two of 31 Thoughts, the podcast. I want to thank our producer, Emil Delich. I want to thank Henrik Zetterberg for stopping by. Congratulations on a wonderful career. Going to suck not having him in the NHL because he's one of my favorite players to watch. Elliot, I suspect you are the same.
Yep.
And we've got some big things coming up this year, which we can sort of wink at but not really talk about, which involves video and perhaps YouTube as well. So we might have to like drag razors across our faces and put makeup on.
No, you know what? I'm tired of making concessions to that.
All right. Thanks to everyone who downloaded. Thanks to everyone who listened. Thanks to everyone who was so patient while we enjoyed our off season. But we are back like a vertebrae. 31 Thoughts. The podcast continues season two. Thank you so much for listening. We're back next week.